Well, I'm sure all the conversation over tea break was about spiritual matters. I'm sure you spoke exclusively about that content. Anyway, we have 72 minutes to engage in these magnificent, important, life-affirming questions that you may have. Who would like to start? Who's got something they would like to ask or say?
I have a question.
Yes.
During meditation, I try to still the
mind. Yep.
And go to calmer places.
Yes.
And I'm successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
The I know.
Yes.
The I am. I've been talking about that, but whether it comes from the heart. Then it comes from the mind.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm looking in the right place. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Thank you. It's a really useful question for many people in the room. A peaceful mind is lovely. Be relaxed and have a peaceful mind is lovely. If you want to understand mathematics, for example, and get to the bottom of your uncertainty about mathematics, being relaxed and peaceful won't do any good. It'll be pleasant, you'll have pleasant days, but it won't do any good. Similarly, if we are trying to realize, the word literally realize, the reality of what is behind the mind, then we have to use the mind to do that. So Vedantic meditation is insight as well as peace. Conventional meditations are exclusively about peace mostly. So we are trying to follow a particular mantra or a particular thing to concentrate the mind and still the mind and bring the mind into calmness and reduce the thoughts. That's very important. That ability is very important. The whole of Patanjali's yoga system is geared around that accomplishment. So stilling the mind is a very important skill. If you want to be focused on mathematics, you have to have a concentrated mind. If you're distracted, it'll be no good. If you want to be focused on the truth, as we have discussed it this morning, you have to have a concentrated mind. And those abilities to calm and be still and be concentrated are vital. But Vedantic meditation is using the mind to find what is behind the mind. So how do you do that? It's not only in the meditating state. It's outside of the meditating state. It's in discussion like this. It's in thinking about it. It's in reading about it. It's in learning about it and pondering on that learning. Now, in the Upanishads, it's very specific indeed about what you actually do. It says, you hear the truth as we are today. You receive it. Step one. Step two, you then ponder upon it. Reflect on it. Think about it. Check it out. Discuss it with your teacher. Discuss it with other people. Walk around the place with a kind of fascination of mind which is thinking, okay, I've been told these things, the Upanishads say these things, what is my reality? How does this compare? So we are actively thinking about it. Then the third step is you meditate upon what you have discovered in your pondering. So that step means that we are trying to experience that which we have concluded in our minds. At that stage, the mind isn't actively thinking inside the meditation. But the mind is doing something else. And it's alluded to in your question, because what a person believes they can do is a person believes that they can find consciousness as a thing, or can find being as a thing. Now, this is an absolute obstacle, but it's common. Even in very experienced people, we're told that the I am is there. It makes sense to us. And then we're trying to find it as a thing. It's impossible. It's not a thing, because it isn't an object. This is a crucial thing. Those of you in the room who've been perhaps more experienced in this search, in this seeking, what I'm saying to you now is extremely valuable information. It can transform spiritual life, meditation life. Because even though you might not know it, you may actually be meditating, waiting for a thing to happen, for a sensation or a vision or a new state or something evident, something that you can look at and examine. Because that's how we're used to finding anything in life. We can look at a thing and examine a thing. We're so used to it that when we are told that within us exists I am, I know, the self, God, without realizing, we are applying the same architecture to try and do the same thing. It's impossible, and it'll never happen, which leads to endless frustration in the long-term meditators. So what does that mean? What can you do then? You've asked me a very, very specific question that must be answered. What can you do? If the I am is definitely there, but I can't find it as an object, because it is literally the subject itself. That's why it is the subject. How then can I make progress? By these words, by appreciating its presence, by recognizing its presence, by allowing its presence. Only after you have the intelligence in the mind through pondering and thinking about it that leads you to believe, actually, and be convinced that this is something worthy of discovery. So a spiritual progress starts by being open to the idea rather than being resistant to the idea. And then believing the thing that's being proposed, which is a big step, which leads to a subtle, greater opening in us, believing. And then applying our skills and efforts into trying to do exactly what the Upanishad says, the key word, which I haven't said yet, I don't think, I might have done. The Upanishad uses the word realizing, to realize. If you think on that word, the word realizing, it's not seeing, it's not having, it's not getting, it's appreciating, allowing, and recognizing is my word. My word is recognizing. So this is subtle, but profoundly present. So present that it is literally the wholeness of I. You may have heard in one of the passages that Anna read, she said, it's beyond the known and beyond the unknown. That's how the Upanishad describes it. Now, this means this. A thing that's known, like the flowers, we understand. A thing that's unknown, we don't know it. We have no experience of it. We understand that. But this is different from both. So we have experience of it, but we don't know it. That's what that means. It's something else. It's a transcendent category, unlike what we're used to finding and seeing and getting, because it's not an object. Yet it's absolutely present, and we already experience it. That's what it means by beyond the unknown and beyond the known. So to sum all that up, and try to be very specific for you, calmness of mind is the right platform. In that calmness, you are using the subtle intelligence of your assets to acknowledge and recognize and realize the spontaneous, natural presence of being as itself, by itself. And you are appreciating that, allowing that, recognizing that, and seeing, in inverted commas, seeing through knowing that. That can only happen after some pondering outside of the meditation, some study, some thinking about it. When a person's actually guided in vichara, sometimes in the beginning, we're told to actively use the mind by doing things like, when you're meditating, ask, who am I? Ask, Ramana Maharshi did this. Ask, who am I, in your mind, while you're meditating. So once the calmness is there, and you're making progress in the way I've suggested, those kinds of questions, during the meditation, as themes, are good to hold in your mind. Not to repeat, not to have lots of dialogue, but just to have an intent in your mind. That you know what you're doing, you're trying to appreciate that which is present. It's not an object. You'll never find it as something to look at. Never. It'll drive you crazy for 40 years.
So can I ask, you're saying you calm the mind to sort of set the stage.
Yeah.
Does it reveal itself to you if you set the stage and acknowledge it? You know, and is that what you're saying? It reveals itself to you when you are sort of fertile ground?
Yes and no. It's what I was saying in the previous answer was, you're not waiting for it to do it to you. So there has to be receptivity about you. An active, intelligent, bright receptivity. You're not just waiting for an event. Your own receptivity is alive with brightness and vitality, like an invitation, so to speak. You are recognizing that what you are appreciating is a subtle, non-objectifiable reality.
Which is more than calm the mind.
Yeah. It's realizing. Realizing is a good word. It means seeing and knowing, but not seeing a thing. The actual instruction ends up really in the maturing meditator. The instruction ends up with abide in being, rest in being, stay steady in being. But as I explained over here, you can't do that successfully until you have thought about it and realize what it is and gain some kind of sense of the subtlety of what you're doing. And we're not used to doing that. We're used to objectifying meditations, which is why the Upanishad says, hear about it, reflect on it, and then meditate on what you understand that is happening. I mean, when we had the short meditation just, you know, half an hour ago, what are your experiences? I mean, you sense some presence is there? Something? Some presence? Some moments of presence? So we might call that the background. You know, the mind might be very busy, you might call that presence the background. But that background comes increasingly to the foreground and becomes more important than what the mind's doing.